there. This is Jo McGarry. Welcome to our podcast. A little different from Radio Mojo, the radio show. The podcasts are meant to be a more private, more intimate, more in-depth look behind the scenes with our guests and continuing to bring you the best of eating, drinking and living in Hawaii. If you want to know more about what we do and our work specifically with restaurants and food clients, then you can go to our website mojomcgarry.com, and this podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or any of the other places where you like to get your podcasts. Enjoy, and thanks for being with us. This edition of our podcast is brought to you by Pieology Pizzeria, now with locations in Kailua, Aina Haina, Pearl Ridge and University Avenue. Create your own custom pizza with a new selection of specialty crusts, including house-made thin, house-made whole wheat, house-made thick, gluten-free, and my favourite, cauliflower. All of those choices before you even choose the topping. When they say custom-made pizza, they really mean it. Check out Pieology at their existing Hawaii locations and keep listening to hear of the new locations coming soon. For more information on Pieology, opening hours, and locations, simply go to pieology.com. So I'm so happy to say that I've caught up with the very busy chef, Andrew Lee, who is always running around, and it's such a pleasure to be able to get to sit down on a lovely rainy afternoon and catch up with one of Honolulu's most popular and successful chefs. Hello, how are you?
Hi, how are you, Jo?
It's so nice to see you.
It's been a while.
It has been a while, and largely because you are truly one of the busiest chefs running around town. I thought it would be fun to catch up with where you are and chat a little bit too for people who don't know your wonderful story of how you got here. So how are we? How's everything going?
Things are good. You know, business has been steady. You know, the team that we have has been growing. They're getting more experience, and it helps with like having a really challenging and busy restaurant. I think it accelerates the growth and really focuses on what's important and what's necessary to be successful.
You have been busy since before you opened, really, haven't you, Andrew? I mean, when you popped up and you started to do those dinners, it was pretty evident that people in Honolulu were ready for something different. And I think from the minute you opened the doors here in Chinatown, it was like lines at the door. And were you sort of expecting that? Did you guys know, oh yeah, we're going to be busy when we find a restaurant?
I mean, we don't have like that type of ego where we think it's just going to be busy. Of course, you know, I think we always approach every project with an air of caution, you know, and that helps, drives us, and, you know, adds fuel to the fire that, you know, we have to be on point about the food and how the service is, and, you know, try to execute a clear vision of the restaurant that people understand and can connect to.
I remember when I first met you, you were a brand new young chef at Chef Marlboro. Mm-hmm. And I remember very clearly the day I met you, because there was a kind of very, what I thought of as a very humble intensity about what you were doing. You were in the kitchen and you were prepping for dinner. And there was kind of an assurance about what you were doing. Even though you were working with Chef Marlboro, you had a sense that you were doing what you were going to do. And I wonder, looking back on your earlier days and how you first started, at what point did you realize, okay, my cooking sensibilities are going to be my heritage?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that journey is a very organic process. You know, to be completely honest, I did not expect that it would lead us to opening Pig and the Lady, and that I would be cooking, you know, the food that I grew up and trying to represent my heritage. You know, I didn't expect that to happen. What I was confident in was, you know, just being able to work well in the kitchen, and I had a strong understanding of the foundation of cooking from our chefs that mentored me. And so that's where I had the confidence in that. And I was taught early by by Chef Marva and Kevin Chong, that, you know, in order to, you know, to really grow in this industry, I really had to have a strong foundation. And so that's what I focused on. And, you know, I think the next level in the journey was to be able to do food that was meaningful to me. And it was natural for me to, you know, kind of reflect on, you know, Vietnamese food and the food that I grew up eating. And, you know, try to meld that with what I've learned in the professional kitchens, and then combine that with, you know, something that was sentimental to me.
So on one of those points, you were quite fortunate because you grew up with lots of people who knew how to cook really good food.
Yeah,
I think that's for sure. If you'd grown up in a slightly different environment, you might not have been able to draw so easily and so clearly on your immediate heritage. Your mom, of course, is a huge inspiration to you. I mean, I know that the cuisine at Pig and Lady is based on your roots and your heritage, but did you grow up eating like this? I mean, are some of the broths and some of the sauces literally the same taste that when you were growing up?
Yeah, I mean, those are the things that, you know, on our menu that we don't really touch. We don't try to change it. We try to keep it as authentic as possible, as close to, you know, the recipes that, you know, was passed down in our families. We felt that it was very important to try to share that with people. Everything else is, you know, is up for creative inspiration. But like the traditional recipes, like the broths, definitely not, we don't touch it, you know. It's like, you know, your grandma's Sunday sauce. You don't touch that. You just leave it as is. It's perfect the way it is.
And that's one of the reasons why when people come back here again and again and again, like for me, when I come to eat, I already have the taste of the broth in my mouth, and I expect that taste. And if there was something different, I would really think, oh, what's up?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we teach our cooks that, like, I teach my cooks exactly the way that I was taught, that, you know, in order to create something new, you have to understand tradition. And so there has to be something in the restaurant that's like, that's sacred. It's the soul of the restaurant. And for us, it's the broths.
Mm-hmm. You are very creative. I mean, I think the humble part of you is the part that pays homage to what's come before you. The creative part of you is the part that's always thinking, how can I change that? How can we do that differently? Mm-hmm. Is that an ongoing process for you?
Absolutely. It's a never-ending process. You know, it could be equal parts, like, you know, the source of joy in the creative process, but at the same time, it could be like just like torturous, you know? You're constantly analyzing what you're doing, and just trying to reach to a point where you think it's you're 100% satisfied. But the thing is, you never really are. And I think that helps push you from the day-to-day operations and really trying to set like a future or a path for the years to come. I think you have to be inspired by what's out there, what's being grown by farmers, and travel. I think that's going to be really important for you to always evolve and grow.
You mentioned a little earlier, you said that it's important for you to cook food that means something. Mm-hmm. What is meaningful food to you?
It's a broad question. It's a hard thing to kind of put a tap on. But basically, if you create something, if you're cooking something, and it speaks to you on a, like, on, you know, for your soul, you know, like it feels right on the inside. You know, that itself can be a form of meaningful, you know. Another thing is, you know, trying to, like I mentioned before, honor the broths. You know, I feel like that those recipes are going to be the ones that I want to pass down to my son, and for my son to know, to pass down to his kids. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's going to be, I identify that as something important for our culinary DNA. Like, we want it to be a part of us. It's not just like, it's just who you are.
Yeah. And it's something that I think people from every culture can recognize, that there is that DNA that we all have. Not everyone is fortunate enough to grow up where it's really evident in their house, coming from their mom and their aunties.
Exactly.
But I think we all recognize it when we see it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's perhaps one of the most interesting things about traveling, mm-hmm. is that you can go to places and feel a connection, mm-hmm. to people through food, mm-hmm. that you don't do through almost any other medium. You've traveled a lot. When you go to Vietnam, when you travel through Asia, do you see new things happening there? Do you get inspiration from travels, or are you just as inspired by going outside to visit a farmer here in Hawaii?
Yeah, I think it's all the same. It's all about connection,
mm-hmm.
And the connection that you make with people, and you know, the experiences that come from it. And so, you know, we try to keep an open mind wherever we go. Sometimes we can be inspired by just like in the moment of I went to the beach and I just had this really cold glass of beer, and this poke was just absolutely perfect. And we wanted to try to hold on to that memory and just try to translate that onto the plate. Or we could be traveling in, you know, the streets of Hanoi and walking down the avenue of Chakalavang, and just the sensory overload of the smells and the sound and the craziness of the traffic, you know, and then eating this extremely savory, simple, complex herbal dish. That's another thing that you want to try to hold on to, and we try to translate onto that, to the plate.
Are there moments that you like that you remember, and they instantly, you can recreate them, and they've been so powerful in terms of either inspiration or just the moment, like just knowing, oh my gosh, this is such a great meal, I'm enjoying it for however many reasons? Do you have like a memory bank of food?
Yeah, it's pretty extensive, you know.
Bet.
Yeah, and that's where the it can be kind of challenging, because you have this, you know, huge database of memories, you know, and experiences that you think are perfect moments. And when you do it when you try to create it on the menu, it's about like kind of curating and selecting things that are going to make sense onto for the restaurant.
This might be an odd question, but do you visualize taste? Can you almost see it as well as taste it?
Yeah, mentally, when we compose a dish, we try to visualize the sensations that you're having on your palate.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost as if, you know, I think it's almost as if it listens to music, and how you feel from it. Or also can review it as like a mathematical problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's pluses and minuses of like sweetness and sour and saltiness. And what is that going to sum up to? So we try to look at it from a lot of different angles.
Yeah, I think when I think about it, when I'm talking especially to very creative chefs, it's almost like the most expression of the mind possible, because there's so much going on. When you're creating a new flavor, you're remembering a flavor, you're remembering flavors that don't work, you remember other partnerships that do work, and then you're also trying to see what it's going to look like. When you think about it, mm-hmm. if you sort of pull it apart, it's quite an amazing thing pull these flavors. Is that why you said earlier that it can be joyful and then sometimes it can be torturous?
Exactly. Sometimes it comes to you real quick. And, you know, when you nail it, like, on the first try, you're like, yes! but then, like, if it doesn't work out, you can get obsessed, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, why is it not working? Or this is just too plain. How are we going to make it different? You know, it's not crunchy enough, it's not soury enough. And so that can be a challenge. But the entire process, whether it's difficult or not, it's necessary and something that we live for.
How important do you think it is to, you talked earlier a little about classical training and being disciplined and finding your path. How important do you think that is to chefs who really have a story to tell, that you get the discipline part down, the classical part down before anything else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's really important because it's it just makes your end goal a lot easier. There's always almost the same amount of obstacles that you have to jump over, whether you're creating a new dish or opening a new restaurant or training a new team or, you know, developing a new concept. It's usually about the same amount of hurdles that you have to jump over. And it all comes down to whether you have your basics and your foundation in place already. Once you're a master of that, you know, you can kind of surpass, you can pass these, like, you know, these initial challenges really easily. Mm-hmm. And you're really getting down to the focusing on the core of what you're trying to do. And that's where the artistic expression comes from. Not the technical part. Mm-hmm. The artistic part is the really difficult thing to really nail down.
When you have moments, it's just you and your small family, your wife and your son, not your big, huge extended family. Are there moments, like food moments, that are? I mean, I would imagine just having a 4-year-old son who's starting to really get into flavors and tastes and likes mm-hmm. and dislikes. That must be kind of fun in itself to watch.
Oh, absolutely.
How children approach food and how they look at it so curiously. Mm-hmm. They're very engaged mm-hmm. with what they eat. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that you have some family moments now that are really quite inspiring just mm-hmm. from that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've been pretty lucky with Oliver, my son. He has a pretty wide range of things that he likes to eat. And, you know, it gives us, you know, the luxury just to throw new things at him, you know, and really kind of take in watching him, like, touch it, get his hands in there, smell it, and just, like, kind of decide if he likes it or not, you know. To see that process is really cool.
Yeah.
You know? And at the same time, we're really busy at the restaurant. And so that's something that I don't really want to miss out on.
Yeah.
I think, like, right now is one of the most, I mean, of course, it's the most important part in the development for Ollie. And so I want to try to be a part of that as much as possible. So one of my days off, you know, it's usually just me and him, and we go on a lot of adventures and a lot of tasting things. We go to the restaurant and we'll play around with some food and make some fresh pasta and stuff like that.
The tactile thing is really fun with children.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's like, and I think it allows us the freedom to go back to an age where we weren't afraid to pick our food up and say,
yeah,
what does this feel like? Not just,
yeah,
what does it smell like?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah, we want them to have an appreciation and understanding that it's important to us, that's why, yeah. And I think once he kind of gets that down, I guess I view that as the foundation for him, for his life. And if he understands that, I think, you know, he'll have a more appreciation of the things that he wants to do.
The more I think you see children appreciate really good food and homemade food and complex soups and broths and stews, the more it makes me sometimes kind of upset that children are fed so much absolute garbage.
Mm-hmm.
When it would be quite easy to feed them,
yeah,
really well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes when I'm retired and done with this, that would be something that I would love to further, because to see the look on a child's face when you give them something purely homemade from scratch. It's absolute joy and delight. Yeah. And then you go into a school and you look at their menu and what they're being fed, breakfast, lunch, dinner. It's really disgraceful.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Speaking of children, you have two children right now. You have the pig and the lady, and you have Piggy Smalls.
Yeah.
How do you describe them and their differences to people who think maybe Piggy Smalls is just the pig and the lady in a different location?
I mean, that's a good question. It took us a while to really be able to distinguish the two, and I feel like we succeeded in that respect. When we first started with the pop-ups, it was just like jazz music. It was just anything that we were excited about, we'll put it on the menu, you know. Like we did pastas, you know, with fried noodles, and then pho with steak au poivre and all these things. And so it's been about like 6 years since we opened Pig and Lady in Chinatown. So we've come to this point where, you know, with Piggy Smalls around now, we really have to be able to make sense of the two. And I want them both to be able to have cut from the same cloth, but are on two different paths. And I saw the importance that it was necessary to distinguish that so the teams could really understand how to grow that cuisine in either restaurant. So at Pig and the Lady, we're focusing on the Vietnamese, Southeast Asian type of flavors melded with some French technique and with some traditional dishes with twists and making it modern. At Piggy Smalls, it's more of the global flavors viewed with an Asian American perspective. And so, you know, we could make a pappardelle pasta, but we'll make it with a lamb curry bolognese with kumquats and fried curry leaves and a little bit of pomegranate molasses. Of course, we season it still with things that are fermented and very savory, like fish sauce, misos, black garlic, those type of things. So that's where the similarity is, where how we build the flavors, but the type of food that we do is different.
So it comes back to that same thing again and again. It's the grounding, it's the learning, it's the good foundation. Then you can go from anywhere on
exactly.
That. Yeah, it's always the same thing over and over again. You're now one of Honolulu's most celebrated chefs. I mean, you are award-winning annually. You've won some incredible awards. The restaurant has many accolades. Any journalist globally who comes into town or television people, they want to come and chat with you. Is that just easy part of the day, or has that brought another level to you of pressure or of having to constantly keep moving, because you are kind of observed. People do look at you now to see what's Andrew doing, what's next. You know, there's the humor in your food, there's the fun element to it. People are always looking at you to see, okay, what are you doing, what's up?
I mean, the pressure can be overwhelming sometimes. It just puts you on a pedestal, to be honest. It's like where you have to, I don't know, always try to push and outdo yourself. So we try not to think about it. I think that's just one way of self-preservation for us, is, you know, with the accolades and the awards and the recognition that we get, it's great, but we have to realize it's a result of the work that we're doing now. And so if we just focus on that, you know, the essentials, like where, how we source things, how we cook it, how the service is, you know, just how what we do, we just focus on that. I think it's going to make everything okay, I guess.
Well, it kind of speaks for itself, I think.
We'll let that speak for itself.
Yeah, because you let what you do speak for itself, and you don't get overwhelmed by the fact that everybody wants to see you, everybody wants to talk to you.
Yeah.
Well, it's very nice of you to talk to me. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Before we go, I want to ask you this question. I think you have a deep love of pasta for some reason. I think you love pasta.
I do. It's a comforting thing.
Yeah.
I love food that's like, it just makes you feel warm.
Yeah.
So there's always a level of comfort in the food that we approach, you know. And then we just try to make it creative.
So one day might we see Andrew Lay doing just pasta, or
never.
We will wait and see what your next idea is. It's lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking the time. Andrew Lay is the chef owner of The Pig and the Lady in Chinatown, Piggy Smalls in Kaka'ako at Ward, and watch this space. Who knows what next? Thank you so much, Andrew.
Thank you.
This edition of our podcast is brought to you by Pyology Pizzeria, now with locations in Kailua, Aina Haina, Pearl Ridge, and University Avenue. Create your own custom pizza with a new selection of specialty crusts, including house-made thin, house-made whole wheat, house-made thick, gluten-free, and my favorite, cauliflower. All of those choices before you even choose the topping. When they say custom-made pizza, they really mean it. Check out Pyology at their existing Hawaii locations and keep listening to hear of the new locations coming soon. For more information on Pyology, opening hours, and locations, simply go to pyology.com. Hey, thanks for being with us. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. For more information, remember, go check out our website, mojomcgarry.com. We'll see you next time.